Welcome everybody to our first episode of Coffee with the Johns. So the purpose of this was to pretty much, there's so many things going on. I guess I gotta mute the volume here. So many things going on in media and with the news and in real estate, and they're happening so quickly. And because of the lockdown and COVID, we haven't been doing a lot of networking. So I'm always getting messages, emails, Facebook messages of people saying, hey, did you see this thing that just hit the news or that thing? What are your thoughts on this? So we thought with John, like, hey, let's just go live once a week and give you pretty much our take on the news. So with me, Mr. John Barr, and we're just going to give you our 2 cents on things that are happening in the news, how we feel it's going to impact the real estate market, and as well as give you tips and stuff that we're learning along the way. So as many of you know, we have gotten into new builds, new construction. So there's a big learning process on this, especially dealing with historic districts and everything. There's also a lot of things that we've been learning as the market is moving faster and it's appreciating and there's low inventories and all these things. So with the properties that we're listing, how we're listing them, what kind of work we're doing to them and all of this, it's been a lot of changes in the way we renovate and do our property. So we're gonna be sharing a lot of these things with you as they go on so we can be kind of coming to you at a faster pace so you can stay up on all the changes. So Mr. John, wanna welcome everybody?
Welcome everyone.
We already have Oren saying, hey, what's going on, Oren? Todd, happy Friday, Todd. Yes, it is. We are we're very excited for this.
It's Friday already?
Yes, sir.
God, that goes fast.
So with all this being said, like I said, we're gonna cover a lot of what the news, tips, stuff like that. If this is your first time on our show, checking anything else, just subscribe below. And what would mean so much to us if you can share this on your social platforms, anywhere that you like to work with people, that would mean a lot to us. If you can just share this with everybody.
Write down the YouTube channel on a letter, mail it to your grandma. That'd be cool too, if snail mail is the best way to share it.
Yeah, especially from San Antonio to Austin. Ever try to mail a check from San Antonio to Austin? It could take 6 weeks.
And that's one of the things, it's like they're talking about like the postal service and stuff. I think you were having this conversation The other day about how they're like, oh, the postal service, they're taking money from, and not to get political or anything like that, but they're talking about taking money and how like it's going to slow everything down. And my first response when I saw that was like, dude, I tried to mail a check from San Antonio to Austin 3 years ago and it just never showed up, just disappeared. And then just recently we tried to get some checks from Colorado from somebody and it took 2 months for a letter to make it from San Antonio or Colorado to San Antonio. It's like the postal service has always sucked in my mind. And if it's an important document, I ain't putting it through the postal service.
No, you have a better shot of just walking it over.
It really has, because I still don't know where that letter went to Austin 3 years ago.
So one of the first things, we have a few things we're going to try to get to. We want to keep it within an hour so it doesn't drag on too much. But the first thing we wanted to talk about was the 5% refinance fee by Freddie and Fannie. 0.5%.
Big difference.
5%, 0.5, potato, potato.
It's only a massive increase.
So the 0.5%, for those of you that don't know, Fannie and Freddie came out with a fee that they're tacking on to refinances.
We'll call it a fee, not a money grab.
Yes. Well, they called it something else, which was hilarious.
Oh, they're trying to basically say, I wrote it down, but basically they're trying to say that by taking cash, it helps build the reserves to offset losses that they're expecting to come in the future.
Yeah. And so I mean, this is from Freddie themselves. They said, as a result of risk management and loss forecasting precipitated by COVID-19 related economic and market uncertainty, we are introducing a new market condition credit fee. So this is a part that blows. So pretty much what it is again, if you're going to refinance, there's a 0.5% fee tacked on to your refinance. So on an average loan, median prices in San Antonio right now are $255,000. So that's more or less, if you're going to refinance, about $1,275 that you're going to have to be paying extra. So that's a nice little chunk of change. And then I also read how these there's more apparently more fees involved in this that can equal out on a 30-year loan for the same price of $255. It could equal out to an extra $19,000 that you're going to pay over a 30-year loan. Like, to me, it's just what frustrates the hell out of me with this is that Fannie and Freddie are GSE, right? Government-sponsored enterprises.
Yeah.
So what that means is that what happened in 2008, they messed up.
This is live, so John can't edit this stuff. So yeah. Kids beware.
I'm working on my cursing. Sorry. But they screwed up in 2008. Government came in and they said, hey, don't worry about it. We got you. We'll take care of you. And because of all this, they're still under the government's
conservatorship is what it's called.
Yeah, protection, I call it, you know. And the FHFA wants Fannie and Freddie to have $240 billion in capital before they're released, and they only have $28 billion. So now they're saying they need to add this fee because of their management, because of their risk. And they're protected and backed by the government. It's like, this is a money. How is this not a money grab?
I mean, it clearly is. And because it's also like, I think there's like 36 senators wrote a letter to the head of the FHFA saying like, basically like, WTF, like we're trying, the Fed is printing money to buy all these mortgage-backed securities to liquefy the market, to drive interest rates down, to encourage people to refinance. And then the government comes out and says, well, we're going to take a piece of that pie now and take it all for themselves. Or not all for themselves, but tack on that extra fee. And they actually requested this stuff back in March. They wanted it to be on new home loans and refinances, but it was rejected. And then they did this just on refinances. Well, I mean, a lot of it is, too, is like they're screwing a lot of, or not screwing a lot of lenders, but a lot of lenders that had already rate locked people. And since they put this out in such a quick format in September, a lot of these loans that might be in process that they can't assess this fee onto because the rate has been locked, but the lender has to fork over those fees. Like they could pay millions of dollars if they, like some of these big banks, they have like 300, 400 mortgages going at one time. Yeah. And then all of a sudden this fee gets imposed in such a short frame. Yes, while the new one's coming in, they can tack that fee on, but they have to eat that loss for all those houses. And a lot of them, like this 14, 15, whatever that fee may be, it may be more than that lender's making on the entire loan as far as originating it, packaging and selling it. So they actually could take a huge loss from that stuff. So the way it was rolled out, it just doesn't pass the smell test on them saying that this is just for precautions and we're not going to worry about it. It's like, okay.
Well, what's funny is that if you read what Freddie put out, they're like, and don't worry, because this is just on refinances. We're not going after first time, actual house loans. It's like,
you tried.
No, you douche. You try to go after them, but you were rejected. Now you're coming off like you're the nice guy. Like, hey, you know, we're so nice. We care about the little guy. And what's screwed up about this is people are refinancing because the government cut off your legs. Like COVID happened. And they and this is not an argument about whether there should have been or not a lockdown, right? We've said this before, whatever, right? There's a lockdown. But you can't create a lockdown and then say, you still got to pay everything, though. Don't go to work, but you still have bills. You know, like, you can't make any money, but you still got to pay this on time. It's like, what the hell is going through your brain? You know, either you open up the economy or you shut everything down, like including paying bills. So people are refinancing, trying to lower their interest, trying to get some money out so they can get some breathing room. And now they're like, oh, you want to refinance? What was the other stat? 65% of loans are refinances right now. That's a 12 straight weeks of year-over-year growth of refinances. Like, that's an immense amount of refis because people are needing the help. And Freddie and Fannie are like, yeah, we want a little chunk. We want to wet our beak too on you having to struggle with all this, even though we're protected by the government.
It's just they're just trying to get their piece of the pie to line their coffers and bucks. I mean, I get it from their standpoint, like preparing for losses, but it's also like you're a government-backed agency. You got $28 billion in cash reserves for this kind of stuff. But then it really does, because like my parents right now are going through a refinance. They just went through the whole process of learning their interest rates on everything and going through. And now it's like out of nowhere, this new fee just appears. And it's like, well, the interest rates are still significantly low. It's still worth it for them to do. There are going to be people like on the line that it's like, all right, this just raised my mortgage payment $15. And so if they don't have significant amount of equity they're trying to tap or a big difference in lowering, they might not lower their interest rate. They might not refinance.
Oh, for sure. I mean, and so this is supposed to take effect September 1st. The FHFA is planning on a delay from September 1st, but they just haven't decided when it's going to be delayed. They're not saying they're going to rescind it because they support Fannie and Freddie for whatever corrupt reason that is.
Basically, every organization besides the FHFA has been like, what the fuck are you doing? Yeah. Like, why are you doing this? Like, the Trump administration, senators are irritated.
On both sides. That's a fun part. Yeah,
bipartisanship. Like, yeah. Basically, every housing authority board, I mean, yeah. NAR or... Texas Association of Realtors, National Association of Realtors, California Association of Realtors, every housing person wrote some kind of formal letter just being like, we are against this for the reason we've all just stated.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very interesting way of them kicking people while they're down. And it's really messed up. We definitely are, you know, stunned by this, but it is what it is. Elizabeth Nuremberg. Hello, Elizabeth. She says, a great way to start her Friday. Well, happy to have you on. If everything is coming through okay and audio and everything, please let us know. Again, this is our first time doing this with YouTube, so we don't know what we don't know with YouTube. So if everything's working, everything's coming across good, let me know. Oh, that's why. My computer, yeah. How's now? Video went back on. You can see us now.
Why you gotta scream?
I don't know. It's I don't know why I gotta scream. I don't scream. I speak in all caps.
Well, that's what happens. That what you said?
Tell there yourself. We go. Okay, so it seems like the video is back up. Yeah. All so right, apparently my computer, I just decided to switch over. Gotta love technology. So next thing on the docket, the Fed chairman spoke yesterday. And they have astonishing updates that nobody could have anticipated ever because they're so innovative with their mentality.
I watched his speech this morning, and really all that they're doing, they changed, is they always had a 2% average inflation that they were always trying to target. Yeah. So when it hit 2% and unemployment was low, they started raising interest rates to kind of keep it at 2%. But one of the things they've started to do is they do a study every so many years of how the previous policies was affected. And they refer back to, it's kind of an interesting, when you go back to like the 1970s and 80s, Paul Volcker had the opposite problem, was out of control inflation. So he raised interest rates, did all the stuff that he did. And over the past 30, 40 years, it's been relatively stable and working to where they can lower interest rates in time of economic turmoil to spark the economy, keep it going. And as it heated up, they could raise interest rates and bring it back down. But now it's the point where we're at zero. Mm-hmm. And now they have the opposite problem of like, well, we need some inflation because too low of inflation actually causes this. They're realizing causes problems as well. Is that he was saying that the productivity level is dropping, and is like that's what raises standard of living, is having a robust productivity efficient or good productivity raising over time and being more efficient. And so what they're basically going to do is they're going to let inflation, instead of targeting 2% and raising interest rates, then they want the average to be 2%. So what they're really trying to do is basically saying they're going to do whatever they can do to really force inflation into the market, and they're not going to stop it at 2%. So they're going to keep rates significantly lower, encouraging people to take risk, encouraging people to take loans out to stimulate the economy, to get inflation back up and get it over 2%. So basically, if one year you have it at 1%, the next year they're going to let it run at 3% to hit that average 2%. And if you look back over the past 10 years, we barely hit 2%, hardly ever. So this we've been running at like 1%. So it's like, how long and how high are you going to raise this thing?
Well, this is what's actually funny, though, is that it says over here, you know, the chairman announced that the Fed will allow They will allow inflation to run modestly higher for periods of time.
Modestly.
No, like, but
define modestly, please.
But they're going to allow. You haven't been able to get inflation, and you've been trying to get inflation over the last 10 years. How are you allowing anything to happen? You cannot get inflation to save your life.
My thing is, I think what are they going to do? We don't know, but this is, they're coming out with a new target that's their goal. So they're going to be coming up with new ways to, that they had in the past, whether it might be from more quantitative easing or that it's not QE anymore. They might just back the market so they become the ultimate buyer. And it's like, the reason the stock market is through the roof right now is the Fed intervened very quickly in a very large scale. So that has created a quote unquote wealth effect where people can sell stocks, get cash from their stocks and liquefy the economy and go out and spend. So I think that's something that is going to be normal going forward. And the thing the Fed does is like nobody ever covers it.
No.
In good form. You get headlines, but that's really it. You don't understand what they're doing in the background. So like my take is I think they're going to pump more cash into the market to where people always are saying like, oh, it's a manipulated market. It's like, no, it's just the market now. Yeah. That is what it is. Like if every recession, the government does something, they come up with new ways. They say the Fed's out of tools. It's like, yes, they're out of traditional tools, but they're trying to create new tools. And where they might, I think they're just going to continue to be the ultimate buyer of things to get cash into the economy different ways. Yeah. And they're going to do it, I think, via the stock and bond market because they're buying junk bonds. They're incentivizing people to take risks and they don't lose because somebody's there to buy it. So I think that's what they're going to start doing is trying to create that inflation by any and come up with new tools to incentivize risk taking to get more cash into the economy to raise wages to get more cash and try to force that inflation.
In the last 5 months alone since COVID happened, they've printed over they've bought over $2.4 trillion of treasuries and mortgage-backed securities. $2.4 trillion. That's real money. And they're still struggling to get inflation. So then they lower interest rates where mortgage loans and everything are like below 3%, right? I mean, mortgage rates, all of that, stupid low. You still don't have inflation. In the past 10 years, they still haven't been able to hit inflation. They raised interest rates into weakness because they weren't able to get inflation, but yet the market was pressuring them like, if we're so strong, raise interest rates. They did it and they screwed it up, scared the whole market, scared everybody. Now they're back to zero. I'm curious to see what their tools are going to be.
I think it's going to be that. They're just going to continue to push money into the economy. And mortgage rates are not going to rise for a very long time because what they're really trying to do is like they're trying to get, and this is one thing he stated, is like over the term, since we've hit zero, is like their normal tools are not there anymore. We're lowering interest rates because like their job is to make sure the market functions properly, giving a stable financial system and keep unemployment growing in a growing economy. Well, now some of their traditional tools of interest rates are at zero. And they can't get them higher. So they want to run inflation higher to get interest rates back up to a level to where they can lower them when there are economic turmoil. So I think in the short term, they are going to do whatever they need to do like to get inflation well above 2%, to where they want to get inflation 4%, 5%, 6% to average out this last 10 years of low growth. So then they can get interest rates up to 4%, 5%, 6% short term and have those tools. Because I think it was, you need to lower interest rates at least like 3% or something like 2-3% on average to help stimulate an economy. But if we can't get it up to 2% without hurting the economy, they have to create inflation to where they can let it go, to where they essentially want part of like the 70s and 80s back to help eliminate some of this debt. Because right now all the debt's so high that they need inflation to run rampant for a while to where they can pay back all this debt they've created with cheaper dollars and basically erode the purchasing power of the dollar in the economy, because it's a global thing. It's not just the United States anymore, like the entire world. And he's referenced that. It's like the entire world is having this problem. So they need to create inflation across the globe. So it's not, and I mean, I guess in that case, like it is a good thing because everybody needs the exact same thing. They all need inflation. They all need to cheapen the dollar. So you can get a unified kind of response across the world versus just one country trying to do it. Kind of like it's not Japan in the 90s, I think it was, where their inflation took off and they've been stuck in this low growth.
Yeah, they've been stagnant because they're by themselves.
But now it's like, no, the whole world is now in this problem and we need to create it. So, I mean, it's good if you have real assets. I mean, for us, real estate, well, it might hurt in the short term because they raise interest rates and stuff, but inflation, it is going to increase home prices, gold, silver, stocks, bonds, like assets. So it's like cash is not something you're going to want to be holding if they are successful in doing what they need to do. And I do have full faith that these powers can create this stuff eventually, somehow, some way. What are going to be the detriments of it? Yet to be seen or how they're going to do it. But I have a feeling over the next 10 years, they are going to somehow figure out a way to do it. And you, unless you're watching and really studying it, you're not going to hear about it. All of a sudden one day you're like, well, you won $300,000 for that house. 10 years ago, it was 100.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm, you know, I wouldn't say I'm pessimistic. You would, but I don't have faith in these people. Feel like the stuff they're going to do, yes, they're going to do whatever needs to be done. They're going to use this crisis like they did in 08 as an excuse to pretty much go balls to the wall with printing money, with doing whatever the hell they feel they need to do. So an economist that we like to follow, Richard Duncan, brought up a really good point. He's like, this is no longer capitalism. The U.S. has not been capitalistic in a very long time. We've gone into creditism. I don't know if that's a real term or if he made that up, but pretty much it's saying, you know,
you have to produce credit.
We need credit. That's it. We need debt. We need credit. We need people borrowing.
And like, that's why you go back, you have to have inflation from that, because over long term, if it stays stable, you have too much bankruptcy and stuff like that. You need inflation to, when you issue credit, it can inflate that away with new stuff. You need to have the continual cycle of reissuing debt and credit, to where the days of being quote unquote fiscally responsible are gone for businesses, and even toward they're trying to push it onto homeowners now. So it is very interesting. It's one of those that I'm glad they're stepping in, but it's also I'm scared they're stepping in, because don't underestimate their ability to screw things up. And so like there's going to be unintended consequences, and usually who gets hurt is the people that are quote unquote trying to help. But it's one of the things like tuning into stuff like this, and why we watch so much data of what's going on in the economy, watching our shows, is we want to know what they're doing, what other people are seeing, because and you get a collective kind of thought or thoughts around multiple people, you can kind of move in the right direction with the right people. But if you just kind of bury your head in your sand and just kind of, well, I'm just going to do my thing and go to my job and just hope on my 401k and that's the only thing I'm going to do to invest. It's like, yeah, you're betting on one asset class now, not multiple. And that's where my thing is like, you need to be well diversified, because some are going to do good, some are going to do bad. You don't know what's going to happen. So it's like, you got to kind of understand and study and follow all of this stuff, but you're not going to be a scientist, because some are going to get it right, some are going to get it wrong. You kind of want to be like, well, I want to be half right and half wrong. So as a whole, I'm good in the long term.
Well, and I think the biggest thing for how to tie this back into real estate is, you know, your real estate is your business. So just because this is they push it for creditism and everything, don't run your business fully leveraged. You need to have your reserves. You need to have your protection. You need to make sure that you're not setting yourself up for a huge bankruptcy later, because you've run yourself so thin, so on margins pretty much, on debt and leveraging and just borrowing money and credit cards and everything, that now something happens and the government, for whatever reason, decides to just pull the plug on all this printing and government back and everything. You lost everything. You lose all your properties. You lost all your investment. Like, why we've done very well during this crisis is we were always very cautious. We are always making sure that we're not over leveraged, that even though we're take a risk, let's say with new builds, our main business of our bread and butter is still growing and producing so much revenue as we take these risks. Because then it's like, well, if this doesn't pay off, we have the rest of our business that we know will take care of those losses, right? So, I mean, that's how you got to look at all this. It's what's going to happen. We just don't know. And that's the facts.
right?
Nobody knows.
And no economists, like, they can't predict it because we've never been in this situation in the past. Yeah. Like people are like, well, if you look at history, history doesn't matter.
Well, that's what I think a lot of the stuff is it's always new. Like I have a feeling I haven't been able to go back and do research articles, but it's like, this is the time that we're experiencing now. And like, this is the first big economic downturn we're experiencing because we came kind of age in 2008.
Yeah.
So we didn't know the leading up to it. To where it's always new. Nobody understands what's going on. Nobody can predict what's going to happen. And they say, oh, well, this time, just like last time, it's like, no, it's always different.
Yeah.
Nobody can ever predict it coming. Yeah, there might be a few people that saw it, but then it's also, it was still a guess to them too. They just happened to guess right. So
it's all guesses.
Like, it needs to be diversified, and you can't, like, it's just focus on what you know, but don't underestimate the economy to come around and smack an industry or smack a portion that you're fully invested in understanding, and it takes you down.
Yeah. So for those of you listening, watching live, put a question below. If you have anything that you're doing in your real estate market with your houses, maybe you're doing flips or marketing or anything that you have some questions, maybe something about what we're talking, ask. This is the time to ask. Any concerns, anything that you need help with, this is your time to ask. We're here. That's what, you know, between John and I, we'll be able to pretty much answer almost anything that you may have. Not because we're awesome, because we are. But it's more because we've done a lot. We've done a lot in the past, you know, 6 years, 7 years that we've been doing this. We've done all kinds of deals, all kinds of strategies. We actually had Oren ask, you know, he said before, he says, love your monthly updates, but can't figure out what is your business all about. So Oren, we're investors. Our business is about just buying real estate. We fix and flip. We do a lot of it, fix and flip. We've lately gotten into the buy and hold space. We just picked up our eighth rental. We're new builds as well. We're a real estate investment company. We focus on that, on buying real estate, investing in the market, building our portfolios. And in the process of doing all this, that's what all these videos are for, is we share what we learn as we go. Because there's a lot of things that we always hear, you know, especially like you have bigger pockets, you have all these podcasts, but you always hear people from all over the country that give tips about things they're doing now that's so far into their business that doesn't relate to people starting off, doesn't relate to people here in Texas, you know, and it's stuff that's like, yeah, it's good information, but you're not really going to be able to do anything with it. So we share here locally our local experience, right? How it is dealing with the city, how it is dealing with contractors, with all of this. And that's the purpose of this podcast, the purpose of everything that we do, the videos on YouTube, is to share with you the stuff that we learn. So everything we share is our own personal experience. Nothing is hypotheticals or things that we've read about, except for what we're reading here of the news that's hitting the market. But that's, in a nutshell, that's kind of what our business is. So I hope that helps, Oren. And always, you know, if you have any questions about real estate, always feel free to reach out to us. So kind of tying all this back in, low interest rates has been an interesting factor in the market, because we have a perfect storm of low interest rates, low inventory. So months of inventory is stupid low. And a huge demand of people wanting houses, because what a lot of people realize is when the lockdown happened, you don't want to be in a small house. You don't want to be in an apartment because you have nowhere to go. You have no yard. You have nothing. You have nothing to do. It's hilarious how Home Depot has just like, when all this happened, was sold out of like all lumber and everything because everybody's doing DIY projects and everything. Yeah. So what we've noticed is this perfect storm has created a huge increase in sale prices.
Well, it's also what's been driving it for a long time is everyone thinks like, oh, real estate's going to take a huge hit from the economy because that's what happened last time. It's like, well, it's a completely different market than like we were actually overbuilt. We have way too much housing stock for the need leading into the 2008 financial crisis. Right. And then you had all the scandals going on with the liar loans and the ninja loans and stuff like that. So that created a storm in that aspect. But now the builders and everybody have learned to where you're looking at, it's like, we're underbuilt. We need inventory. We need housing for people to move into, especially in growing metros like San Antonio or where we're at. So you have that still of just, it's underbuilt. And like where this economy is, or where this issues are isolated in the economy, it's only in a couple industries. Like I was talking, I listened to a podcast of where and who have lost their jobs. When you break in, yes, we might have 8, 10, 12% unemployment, but where is that located? It's not like the last housing recession where it's across the whole board and pretty evenly spread. It's right now, it's really tied to the leisure hospitality industry, the travel industry, and lower income brackets. So we're like, who's buying all these houses? Why are sales going through the roof? And what's the inventory? And it's because people still do have jobs that can afford jobs. They're working from home. The economy is adapting and they're finding ways to get money and still transact business to where now you still have the people that could afford houses before are now have an extra incentive to go buy houses because they realize they don't want to be stuck in their houses this entire time. So that's pushed up sales volume above norm. I think it was a 25% year-over-year increase in sales volume. Yeah. And then you have this other storm of, you have this virus around that. Do I want to list my house right now? Hell no, I don't want somebody walking through my house with like 15, 20 people a day going through, potentially bringing the virus into my home. So people aren't listing their houses.
Yeah.
So now that's creating increased demand to buy and a decreased ability or want to list and sell. So people are just, instead of moving, they're refinancing. So that's now created interest rates have fallen. And you've created this huge demand and less inventory, and that's created a massive spike in prices to where you guys will see, if you follow our channel, you'll see the market updates coming out on Sunday.
Yep.
The most recent market update to where July prices, median sales price, tend to fall a little bit. But this year, we've had back-to-back 10,000.
Don't give it away.
it's a highlight. It's a highlight. I'm not going to go through the whole thing. Or we've had back-to-back 10,000 year-over-year price increases. So we're hitting huge records. And I mean, it's just a rocket that took off.
Yeah.
And you'll see it in the graph. So check into that. I'll be looking for that on Sunday, the market report. But it's exactly that. There's no inventory and there's a massive demand for housing. And that's going to, and then with low interest rates, even with this little half point increase, I don't see it affecting here in San Antonio that much. I mean, as a whole across the nation, yes. But here, I don't see it slowing down the demand. And it's only on refi. So, like, the demand to buy is still going to be there.
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
And we can't build 7 million homes overnight. I was like, I don't know if anybody, if you guys ever tried to build a house, it's not the easiest process in the world. The government agencies that oversee that stuff is just ridiculous, to trying to get people with the permits, with the inspections, with the engineering, the stuff they want. It just drags stuff out so long that it's very hard to build entry-level housing as an individual home builder. You have to build at scale. But even then, your big home builders are still bringing houses on the market here in San Antonio in the 250s. So,
yeah. And it's going to be... And then you have material costs has gone up because supply chains have been affected. Builder grade stuff has been sold out. It's hard to get. So you got to go to the next tier. Jake Tank asks, you know, what is happening with the labor cost here?
There's a labor shortage. I mean, on our new builds right now, we had a framer that disappeared for a week and we had to get a new framer in there, and getting new framers, like, they're all busy. Like, they're 2-3 weeks out to get new people in. Like, there is plenty of work for people that want to go out and get it in the construction industry and the individual home builders.
Yeah.
So I think labor costs, that is going to create pressure for prices to increase when they know there's that much work. It's simple supply and demand, that when you have that much demand for housing and you can't get the supply to market, it's going to increase the demand side of, like, pricing. Yeah. So that is going to push prices up. I mean, you see it in lumber. And not only that, you have the shortages of the supply chains broken up to get plywood. Plywood's doubled in the last couple months.
Yeah.
Like, I think it was the price of lumber has gone up 14% in the last 40 days, where you have here in San Antonio, one of the suppliers, like MG, used to give 30-day quotes for big lumber packages. They're doing 5 days now because of the increase in pricing, because when you have that massive demand, that pull to get product to the market, how do you do the supply? How do you get the supply up to eat that, or to meet that equilibrium? Is you pay more for it. You have to incentivize people to take the risk. Like, I'm scared to go to work for $15 an hour. All of a sudden, somebody starts offering you $22 an hour, and you're like, man, that's like a 75% increase in my previous pay. I'll do that I'll take the risk, and especially if they're doing the safety thing. So now, but those costs have to go somewhere. They have to get eaten up by somebody. And it just, one person starts at the chain, multiple people inside that chain, it'll eventually all pass down to housing prices.
And that's the inflation that we're seeing too. I mean, the material costs, all these things are causing home prices to go higher, because it's like, as builders, as rehabbers, we can't afford to do the prices that we used to. Like, you got to sell the houses for more. You know, they have to sell for higher, and then we sell it a little higher, then the next investor sells it a little higher, then the next one. Next thing you know, the prices are going up, and we're having a huge migration of refugees from New York and California.
Please. I was wondering where you're going with that. I was like, refugees? Like, what country's refugees here? Like, a huge migration. Like, California, New York.
It's man. They're escaping the you know, all the violation of taxes and work and everything that's happening over there. And they're coming to Texas. I mean, we're getting huge floods of people coming from all these places. And there isn't a shortage of jobs here. I mean, there's plenty of work.
Like, well, it's like, ever since I've been doing this market updates, like, Texas is always below the national levels.
Yeah.
Like, unemployment might be 10 nationally, Texas is at 8. And the big metros are even lower across the state. So it's one of those, that's why the urbanization, like, people are moving to bigger cities because of the efficiencies and the overall light living style is better than the rural areas. And people are realizing that. So, and people are moving here, and that is what's creating. I mean, it's like this funnel, and Texas is ranked one of, like, the best states for businesses. Yep. So when you go to, like, some of these states like New York and California to open a business there, and the tax rates are like 12%, and there's zero in Texas, it's like, might think about moving somewhere, even though it might be warmer here for some people. But
please don't California or New York my Texas, okay? You're leaving those states for a reason and coming here, so don't try to screw this place up like that one got screwed up, because we're getting a lot of those activists are coming here and doing all their dumb shit that they did in California, New York, and it's like, there's a reason those states suck now, all right? That doesn't work. You're here in Texas because this works, all right? Don't screw it up for us. That being said, interest rates being so low, prices being what they are, we just sold the house that when we bought it, we closed on it, like, pretty much just as the shutdown happened.
I remember you, like, I signed the
paperwork. I was freaking out.
I signed the paperwork, and, like, the next day, the Abbott shut the Texas economy down. You're like, did we already buy that house? I'm like, yeah. And all your packs was shit. And no, like, it turned out to be a blessing in disguise because by the time we did get through the rehab and we put on the market to sell it, like,
what was our target? Initially,
240.
Our target was to sell it
235, 240.
Right. And then we ended up selling for
250.
Right. And I mean,
well, that's also going back to, like, where the, a lot of times, like, a strong housing market is what leads out of recessions. Mm-hmm. You look at the past, not 2008, but it, and this is what's doing it, where, like, they're wanting to create inflation in the market, get money to the market. Fed buys all the mortgage-backed securities, which liquefies people to go out and buy more mortgage-backed securities, which keeps interest rates low.
Yeah.
Well, then now that's incentivizing people, low interest rates, to go out and buy houses. But that's increasing housing prices to, when people do sell, they get more cash. And more people don't take money from... They don't take money. They make 50 grand from selling their house here. They usually don't go put 50 grand down on the next house. They take the 50 grand and go put the minimum down on the next house, maybe 10, 15, 20 grand. So now they have 30,000 in their pocket of actual cash, tax-free.
Yep.
So now that's going to go out them and force them to spend. So I think the housing is going to be a leading driver out of this recession, is, like, that's how they're going to get cash to people that own assets and houses.
Yeah.
So it's going to hurt the people that don't have those things because they can't get access to the cash, and it is going to drive the those people lower and down towards the poverty rate. But I mean, that is just kind of the functioning of the economy. It's like, the people with assets are usually the ones that benefit when they pump cash into the market, because it has to go to assets. They don't just give money to somebody.
And for you as a rehabber, as an investor, this is why it's so important for you to run your comps and for you not to be emotional. Just because you're used to buying a house and doing a full renovation doesn't mean you still have to do that. All right. We are buying a house right now where we typically would do a full renovation on it. But we're like, actually, based on what the market is doing, based on how the neighborhood is, based on the demand, we're actually going to clean it up because you can. It's dated. It's a little dated. It has a few features that are dated, but you can. It's livable. It doesn't have any structural issues. It doesn't have anything wrong with the house. So we're actually going to just clean it up and put it on the market. We're not going to renovate it. We're going to test it out. If it doesn't work, we'll take it back down, renovate it, and then put it. But it's based on data, though. It's not based on our emotions. It's not based on the fact that just because we flip every house doesn't mean that we got to flip this one, right? You got to look at the market. You got to understand where's the market, where's the demand, where are the people? Does this house fit that need? And then you got to look at it like, do I have to do, you know, in a bad market? Yes, you got to go out and beyond the renovations. When this market was really hot before this whole thing happened, like we would look at comps. So we would say, okay, we need to bring up this property to this level. And then we got to go a little bit above so we can stand out. Right now, we're in a whole different market. Right now, we're in a market that's like, just put the house up for sale. I mean, just putting it up for sale is already enough. The fact that we have such low inventory and such high demand, and it's people can afford more because of low interest rates. That's how interest rates affect the house prices, right? Before, somebody could afford a $300,000 house. Now with the lower interest rates, maybe they can afford a $350,000, $370,000.
Yeah, it all goes down to that debt to income. And when you can afford a $370,000 house now versus the $300,000 house, it pushes those prices up and that seller now gets more cash for their houses and pumps it in. So that's one reason why the Fed wants to get the interest rates to a higher level, so they have that flexibility to lower interest rates to drive asset prices up to bring things out of the economy.
But they didn't get it.
Or they haven't been able to get it. So now what are they going to do to force it? Who knows?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting.
But yeah, I don't know.
Another thing that I wanted to touch on is, which I found interesting, is people, in order to make up for the hits that they're taking financially and everything, aside from trying to refinance and getting screwed by the government, they're doing party house rentals. So what they're doing is they're renting out their house precisely that for a party for people that don't have houses and they want to get together. They're renting out their pools. So there's
I love that. I love that thing. You're talking about it last night at dinner.
Yeah.
They're creating a new app to where you can, like, it's Airbnb, but for flex specific spaces where it's like, it wasn't a cool thing 3-4 years ago, but now like I'm renting out my pool for the day for $100 so somebody can have a party at my pool. I'm not renting out my house. I'm just renting out the pool. Yep. So it's kind of funny the way the market creates these new opportunities.
Well, and we were looking at it. They're renting out their pool for $150 for 3 hours for up to 10 people. And then it's like, $3 or $6 for every person after that. Sometimes they have they have outdoor grills and all this stuff, and you have access to their bathroom. I mean, they're renting out their garage for people that need storage space. They're renting out their garage. So what's interesting though is that Airbnb and their whole trying wisdom to be politically correct, they're like, oh no, this is obnoxious. We're gonna not allow anybody to rent out their house as a party house. So if you have a house that can right now sleep 16 people, that's your max. And it has to be that it's sleeping 16 people. It's not a party house. It's still an Airbnb. People are coming to stay. If you're under 25 years old, you got to have a good track record of renting Airbnbs, because if not, they won't rent to you. So they're creating all these limitations because they're like, we don't want to encourage people to spread COVID and all this stuff. So they're making a political call to their platform, which it's fine. I mean, they're their business. They can do whatever they want. But what I see is that if people see an opportunity to make income when they need it, another platform is going to come up, or people are going to figure out a whole different way of renting their properties that's not going to include Airbnb, because it's like, okay, well, screw you. I'm still going to do it.
Fine, I'll go somewhere else.
Exactly.
Well, that's another thing. Like, it cracks me up. So why, if you've followed any of our content before, him, John and I are not supporters of Airbnb. We'll put it that way. It's like, it's not our favorite business model. It's not one we would choose to get in unless it makes sense for something else. But it's just exactly that, where I've seen a lot of people buy these massive oceanfront properties and stuff like that because nobody lives there, but they buy them for the sole purpose of renting them out to large family gatherings and large parties for Airbnb short-term rental purposes. Yeah. And now it's like, now they shut that down. And it's like, Jesus, now you take add salt to injury, or what is that saying? Salt to wound or injury or something like that. But now not only is nobody renting Airbnbs, but now people want to get out and get together. Now you can't even do that. Yeah. And they said, I was looking at their website and they said, guests will be informed about Airbnb's party rules and informed that they may be legally pursued by Airbnb if they violate our policy. This work is currently being operationalized and will be rolled out in the near future. That's from Airbnb's website. So they're putting teeth to this thing.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, oh man, because you see the stuff of some like kids renting parties, houses, and throwing stuff out on Instagram like an hour before the party, and they go into some Airbnb with 50 kids and trash a house. So now they're saying like, well, if that happens, then we can legally pursue you for violation of their policies and stuff. So.
Yeah. And I mean, I believe firmly in people's right to make their own mind up and do their own shit, right? That's just me. It's very weird. I get it. I understand. It's very crazy to think this way, that you want to be able to think for yourself. But it's how I look at it. And if somebody's willing to put up their house, their pool, whatever, and get money in return, they understand there's a risk. And if they're willing to take that risk, it's up to them to take that risk. Mm-hmm. It's your property.
Yep.
You understand? So I'm all for it. Like, would I do it? Probably not. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't be allowed to. So now Airbnb forcing you and saying that they're going to come after you for doing that, you're just alienating people in a situation where people are hurting for money. They're hurting for money. They're getting very creative. I don't know if you know this person, but Molly Hernandez.
Nope.
She put what app or websites are they posting these flex spaces on? I don't know, Molly. I will find out what the website is. My wife knows, so you can reach out to her. But
that's John's fallback all the time. Like, ask, like, what time do you want to go to dinner night? I don't know. Ask my wife.
Yes.
She controls all that. It's like, okay, she's your assistant. Got it.
Yeah, so my wife knows, so I'll definitely reach out to her. And I'll put it after this recording and everything. I'll put all the links to all these articles and everything on the show notes below on the description, so you guys can see where we're getting all this data and information from. Again, subscribe if you haven't already. Check out the market update that's coming out Sunday. But yeah, so people are struggling. People need money. People need help. They're putting up, you know, they're renting their house. They're renting their garage. They're renting all of these things. And yes, Lisa Morales had a good point. You know, they're adding insult to injury. Right? People are trying to figure
that's
it out.
That's the phrase I was looking for. It's like salt to injury.
Yes. Yeah. It's something. Well, salt on injuries. They're not comfortable. But people are trying to figure it out. It's like, all right, fine. We can't go to work. You're not going to help us. Got it. I have a house. People are looking for houses. People need a place. They want to still have a party. They still want to get together. You know, the spread of COVID, all that. Some people just don't give a damn about it, which is their right to. It's like, you have the right to live your life, right? I mean, it is what it is. If you're really scared, don't leave your house. If you leave your house, don't bitch. I mean, like, you can't complain. You know you're risking. It's the same, like, you know, you don't want to get into a car accident. Don't drive on the road. Every time you drive on the road, there's a higher chance you're going to get into a car accident, especially in San Antonio. But, like, it's just how the things work. Like, you're increasing your chances. You want to decrease them? Don't do it. If you're leaving, like us, we go out, we do that because I'm not going to live my life in fear from a freaking virus. if it's my time, it's my time. It's going to suck, but it is what it is, right? Okay. But I'm not going to live my life in fear. And these people are trying to live their lives. They're trying to, you know, take care of their family. And yet these companies, governments and everybody keeps coming in and smacking them in the face saying, no, you lay there and you be miserable and you lose all your money and just, and you got to be happy, right? Like,
well, that's where it goes back to what we were talking earlier, like diversifying. Like some people go all in and only Airbnb. Well, one thing happens, prime example, yep. and that can just wipe you out completely. To where it's like you have to be diligent and understanding, like making sure you have options and you have the ability or enough cash to withstand like a year of not being able to make money from your business. Yeah. I mean, we're going on like, what is this, 6 months of COVID right now? And it's like Airbnb still haven't recovered. So they're having to get creative.
Yeah. So yeah. And diversify. Airbnb themselves are punishing them for it. So as we start wrapping up a little bit, trying to stay within that hour time frame and we're approaching it, I wanted to, we did have a question this week that came in from actually a realtor. So they've been wanting to work with us, trying to list our properties. And one thing that I told them that, look, we don't need realtors listing our properties. You know, it's not hard to sell a property right now. The fact that we have such low inventory is just you well, being an agent yeah. is more than enough.
And I think I know where you're going with this. Like the, are you going like the marketing aspect of it?
Right.
Yeah. And that's where it's like, well, we can list your properties. Like, look, right now I'm an agent. Being with my brokerage, I can list my own properties for just a flat fee of $600. Why do I want to pay on a $400,000 house, which is 12 grand of commissions when I can do it for $600. It's like, that's just me literally giving cash away for the fact that there's no inventory. If I can put a house on the market that is clean, can qualify for financing, and it's gone in 2-3 weeks, what the MLS does enough of a mark and just the fact that it's for sale, no inventory. But I told them, like, look, my business isn't listing houses, acting like a traditional realtor. It's like, I have my license because it's beneficial now. Now, fast forward, like this isn't going to last forever of historically low inventory and interest rates. Like when things change and say this was 2009, 10, 11, 12, when prices were falling and there was a lot of inventory, marketing does become a much more important thing beyond just the MLS because everything's on the MLS at that point. To where like, I'm not going to go through to the open house, put the flyers together, send them to all the brokers, all the stuff that realtors say they do. Yeah. To where it's like, I'm not going to go do all that stuff. So when it becomes important to have that market capability, then it might be worth me to pay somebody 3% to go do all that stuff. Because now I can go focus on what we want to do, which is buying and renovating and producing returns for ourselves and for our investors and the people we work with.
Well, so, and my advice, sir, was, you know, how the market works, right? So right now, like I told her, and this is for all you realtors out there that you realtor and investor, maybe you want to make some more revenue as a realtor, is right now what you should be targeting is buyers, not sellers. All right. It's not hard to sell a property right now, but what does matter is your buyers. If you can, as a realtor, hold open houses in the areas that you're interested in and start building your buyers list, start building your buyers network, start building all of that. Exactly, that funnel for your buyers, educating them, you know, and that means like maybe sending them tips and stuff about the market and building that buyer funnel. Then as soon as these properties go up, or like myself, like when we're about to list a property, if I know that you have buyers, I might bring the property to you first before we even do anything. I'm like, hey, we're about to list this property. You know, if you have a buyer lined up for this, we'll definitely bring it to you.
Well, you want to be the opposite side of the majority. And right now, everyone's trying to focus on sellers because how easy it is. That's what you want to have because you just get on the market, they're on, it's gone, you make a quick buck. Nobody wants to work with buyers right now because they're, you got to go and show all these houses. There's so little inventory. You got to compete with other offers. You got to overpay for houses and it becomes very stressful. But if, because that's, you want to be on the opposite side. So if you have a good buyer flow, when the market does inevitably does shift and it will shift eventually, what you're going to want to have, if inventory is through the roof, anybody can go find in with sellers that want to sell their house. It's the buyers that hold the gold that you want to have. So if your systems are built out to attract buyers in a down market, that, and you have that buyer funnel built.
The camera's now, up there.
Huh?
You keep looking at the mic. The camera's up there.
Okay.
I don't know why you're looking at the mic. Look at the camera.
Well, I'm talking to you in the microphone, I guess.
Yeah, I can see.
It's my first time. Leave me alone. But building that buyer pool to when the market does shift, you have those buyers. Yeah. And because there's plenty of inventory at that time. So that's where focusing on where the attention's not, because eventually it's going to shift to where that it's going to be.
Yeah, and we know realtors personally that are killing it because their whole thing is marketing to buyers. They're constantly educating them on the San Antonio market. When a property goes on the market, they're talking about, look, it's proximity to this, to that, availability to this. Like, you're marketing to buyers. And that's what you need to be targeting as a realtor. That's how you can work with investors. You understand? You can work on investors by saying, hey, I have a large, you know, retail buyers list. I have a good funnel. I can get your houses sold fast. Like, that's what we want to know, right? Because especially as investors, I want to go to you if you deal with buyers and ask you, like, hey, we're about to actually finish putting the final touches on this. Based on your knowledge working with buyers, what should we target here? You understand? And if you can help us as investors, we'll bring the properties to you. You understand? Like, we'll tell you when we're ready to list. But you wanting to list houses, it's you're kind of fighting the current right now. And like John said, this is the time that you build this funnel, because now when the market turns and sellers are plenty, buyers are going to be few. And it's the same for investors, right? Investors right now, you should be working where investors struggle is their buyers. Wholesalers, everybody is finding good, dependable buyers. They're hard to find. You understand? And if you can work that now, when the market turns, there's going to be plenty of sellers, but buyers are going to be very few and far between. So that is, you know, our tip for realtors and investors, for you to get out there. You want to get more deals done, focus on the buyer. So anything you want to wrap up with as we finish this off?
I think we've covered it.
All right. So I hope you guys like this new format. Again, just let us know in the comments below what you think, what you like, what you don't like. You're not going to hurt our feelings. Yeah, a little bit. we're going to be doing this every Friday morning at 9 a.m. Central Time. So please attend live so you can ask questions and you can participate and hear all these things. And if there's anything that we're talking about that's maybe a little over your head, or we didn't explain it well enough, I mean, that's what the purpose of this is. If you want us to analyze a deal for you, maybe you have something, you want us to take a look at it, send it to us. We'll analyze it. We'll give you our thoughts.
Live deal analysis.
Yeah. What do they call that? Deal
analysis?
No, the anatomy, that's after the deal, right? When it's been done. Anatomy. All right. So we'll do, deal analysis. Lisa anything. Morales. Everything. She says, great info, guys. Great job. Thanks for watching, Lisa. Really appreciate the support. So we're very excited. We our goal is, again, the more educated you guys are, the better investors it's going to make you. And that's what's made us very successful, is that we're always staying educated. That's why we do the market updates. We do them for ourselves. We just put them out for you guys. But we do them for ourselves. We were doing them for ourselves way before we started putting them out. Because the more you understand about the market, the more you understand about what the Fed, the government, you know, the Fannie, Freddie, all these things are happening, it's going to give you a huge insight as to what's coming down the line. How are people reacting? What are people seeing? How are they looking at the market? So that's what makes you a really good investor. So I hope this is helping you guys. I hope this is bringing you guys value. Just subscribe to the channel if you haven't. Share with your friends. Tell them about it. The more people, the better. So we can get a nice community of educated investors and realtors and get out there and really help this economy and the people that need it. So thank you all for watching. Thank you for joining us. And I hope you guys have an amazing weekend. And sir, it was a pleasure.
Definitely.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend.
See ya.